Bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone LA podcast, episode 27 for November 4th, 2008. Free Wi-Fi. No, seriously this time. This episode of the iPhone LA podcast is brought to you by Audible. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. All right, it is time for the iPhone LA podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and as always, from the Mac Observer, Mr. Jeff Gammon is here. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, it's great to be here, as always.
It's great to have you, and for Skype to finally be working. This is our, 20th attempt?
I think so. Yes,
we've all done the waving of the rubber chicken, and hopefully it'll stay through this recording. And Adam Christensen is here from the Maccast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. The Skype gods have determined you must be punished.
Yes, and I think it's because of, and we should bring this up right now, just because it's on my mind. Last week we offended Canada, I believe.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Actually, you didn't. It was more the other guests. So we're just gonna say, sorry, Canada. We didn't mean to. And so if you were offended and you were in Canada, then we're sorry, because we love Canada. I love Canada. Let's just apologize for everybody else that we offend in the future too.
I didn't know Skype was owned by RIM. I thought it was like, aren't they PayPal or eBay or somebody?
Yeah, it's eBay. I don't know. They may have some friends. I don't know.
Does all Skype traffic go through Canada as well?
Let's not go there. Let's just not make the same mistake again.
All right. So all you Canadians that may have been offended last week, remember, the United States is your basement. So whatever you throw down here, you don't have to worry about remembering it. It's okay. Just throw it down here and forget about it. It's fine.
Okay, and that is that. So we love you, Canada. And yes. So let's move on to the fun stuff, the iPhone rumor stuff. Well, it's not all rumors. It's actually, I don't think we have any rumors here today. The first thing.
Well, then make one up.
you can get right on that, Jeff. the first thing we have to talk about. We have. Of course, a lot of stuff we're talking about with the betas that are being seeded to developers right now. In the latest beta, iPhone 2.2 Beta 2, it's been found that Apple seems to be adding direct podcast downloading into the iPod application, which is, I think, everything or the one thing that we've all been really looking forward to, especially with the whole podcaster application issue we've been discussing for a while. Basically, any podcast that you have subscribed to right now in your iTunes that you sync to your iPhone, it just kind of adds a little get more episodes link at the bottom of your list, and it doesn't do anything right now. And it's, like I said, it's the beta 2 version. So we're assuming that it just doesn't work because it's beta and it's not turned on yet. But this is really exciting. What do you guys think about the direct podcast downloading?
I would really like to see that. I don't care if it comes from Apple or a third party, but that's a feature that I could use on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's your phone and it's not, your iPod where it's, you're kind of expected to plug it into your computer every once in a while, and it doesn't have any connection to the outside world. It's your phone. You've always got it with you, and if you're on the go and you want to grab another podcast, it's absolutely perfect. And I don't know how they're going to do it as far as if they're going to do streaming, so you can it'll start downloading and then you can start listening to it as soon as it's starts downloading, as long as it's a supported format. That would be great. Yeah, this is just great, and it would make a lot of sense, why they decided to get rid of or not accept at all the Podcaster application. You know, it's obviously it's unfortunate for that developer, but I'm sure even he is probably happy to just have that functionality in the iPod app. I think it's great. I wonder if it would let you browse the. I don't think it would let you browse the current database in iTunes, but. So you would only have access to the stuff that you've subscribed to, and it looks as though, you know, if it's not working right now in the current beta, it's probably going through some sort of Apple server to get the magic going. So
see, I have a couple things on this. I agree with you. I mean, it would be great if I have my subscribed podcasts. For some reason, I'm out and about, and I run out of episodes, which frankly doesn't happen to me all that often because I sync most of the episodes of the podcast that I subscribe to already. You know, I have 3, 4, 5 episodes of any podcast at any given time. So I just bounce around. So this has never really been a problem for me. That said, I'm very excited to see this feature coming, you know, if it turns out it's going to be in there. But I'm kind of with you, Michael. I would more like to see podcasts supported in the iTunes app, in the iTunes, you know, music store app, so that I can actually go out and find a new podcast. Or if I'm out and about, what happens to me more often is, I'll be listening to a podcast and they'll mention another podcast that I want to subscribe to and listen to, but I'm not at my computer. Or somebody will say, hey, have you heard this podcast?
Right.
Well, no. And that seems like a more compelling feature to me than just being able to get more episodes. And the screenshot we've seen so far just shows that functionality, that I can get more episodes that I haven't synced up. And in my case, most of the time, those are the older episodes that I've already listened to. So, you know, I need to see a little bit more to get truly excited about it. Any additional support for podcasting, of course, is good. The other thing, though, is you mentioned, you know, none of this stuff is rumors. You know, I have a couple things on that, because these screenshots seem to be, at least the ones that I've seen, kind of coming from one source. I don't know. Maybe you're closer to this stuff, so maybe you've seen more confirmation of this. You know, the developers, most of them I know, signed an NDA and aren't planning on breaking it. So I'm not sure how this stuff's leaking out. But the screenshots seem to me like they could be fairly easily faked and probably pretty accurately.
Yeah.
You know, I'm believing most of the stuff. The one hesitation I have is that I believe in this version, we've also heard the rumor that, the support for the notification server is in there, but didn't we hear that about the 2.1 release and the 2. whatever release? I mean, it seems like some of these rumors we keep hearing over and over again, and they don't show up in the final
builds. Well, okay, so. To address the push notification thing, that was in there in earlier builds of the beta. I think it was either I think it was beta 2.1. It was in early builds of that, and then it was removed at some point. And I don't recall what the details are of that, but at some point it was simply removed from the beta seeds, either 2.0 or 2.1. So that's why we never saw it there. The only thing that really kind of makes me think that this is true, in this whole rumor is that, that the person, you know, who claims to have it, said that it wasn't working right now. And that just doesn't seem like something someone would arbitrarily throw in there,
right,
if they were just making it up.
Yeah. So, well, then the other part of that is that, just so people don't, you know, get too lose their heads too much, and I'm trying to, you know, be balanced about this, is that sounds like sometimes they add some features, put some things in there they think they might develop, and then maybe run out of time and might get pulled back.
Yeah.
So it might be a hint of something that doesn't show up maybe in the 2.2 release, but it could be the 2.3 release or the 2. But at least we have an idea that Apple's thinking about it.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, the thing that really bothers me, and, you know, I believe it's November now. And I think we were supposed to see the push notifications by September. Is that right?
That's when Steve promised them. Yeah.
Yep. So we don't have those right now. In my thinking of, you know, what that would be like, and, you know, using all these applications that I have, there are a lot of applications, OmniFocus, for example, where it's not really connected to a server all the time, right? Whereas, you know, like an AIM type thing would be, where, you know, it, all the time, you know, it can be connected to that push notification server and then just say, hey, you know, Apple server, send this notification to the phone. With something like OmniFocus, which could really benefit from, you know, alerts or something else, I don't know if that would actually work the same way. I wonder if OmniFocus would have to have a server set up or something like that. I don't think, you know, applications that just sort of remind you of things or of to-dos or, you know, that kind of stuff. It doesn't seem like that's kind of built in there at this point. So I don't know. That's just kind of a tangent off of...
yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's push. It has to be pushed from a service. So it's going to benefit things more like, say, Brightkite or an AIM.
Yeah, or a Twitter.
You have to have a way to push notifications out to the server and then thereby to the phone. OmniFocus, I believe, is more of a pull thing. You launch the application and it then pulls up your reminders, which are, you know, kind of calendar-based or event-based thing. I'm not sure they could, like you said, I don't think they can be triggered from within the phone.
Right, yeah.
You know, that seems a little too limiting for me because, well, let's use OmniFocus as an example. I have all the data on the phone. So why can't I have it give me alerts just like the clock, the alarm thing that's built in?
Yeah,
it just
no,
seems
exactly.
Like something should be there.
Like register it with the notification server. Just say at this time on this day, you know, whatever, just like a time and date, send this notification.
Well, you wouldn't even need to go that far. I mean, my assumption would be if the APIs were there, and it, you know, I'm looking at and just thinking about how iCal works.
Right.
I mean, you can have iCal kick off an application or a script, Apple script, to do something on a certain time or date. So if that API was available, the ability to sort of insert something either visible or hidden within the calendar app, because we know the calendar app can, you know, pop up an alert to you. Why couldn't the calendar app kick off a little Apple script or something that then makes a call back to the OmniFocus app or makes a call back just to the internal messaging system to throw up a messaging level alert?
Yeah, and that's a service that's already running on the phone, so it wouldn't actually be adding anything. It'd just be you know, throwing something else into a P list, you know, for the daemon to check out.
Yeah, giving you a hook to insert some sort of timed calendar event into the calendar app that then triggers your third party app. So,
right.
I mean, they could open something up like that and not even change any of the core functionality of the phone.
Right. Yeah. So I think that may be even separate from what they'd be doing, you know, with the push notification server. That may not even be something that the developers who are looking at the push notification thing would even be interested in. They're probably just waiting for more of a, you know, and like you said, like an iCal style thing, which is something that I don't think would, you know, by its nature affect the battery life or anything like that. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, so OmniFocus could do a hack around. I mean, I'm pretty sure third-party apps can add entries into the calendar in the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen it happening, but I mean, they could work it that way. It's just, you know, put a reminder on a to-do or an event that's added to the iCal calendar directly on the phone.
Yeah, I don't know if they can do that. It's such a simple thing. I'm sure they could, but yeah, that'd be a nice way to get around it. One other thing, while we're on the topic of the podcast thing, one thing that they need to fix, no matter what, with the 2.2 update, is this, like, when I first saw it, I thought it was great. The fact that podcasts would continue playing after you reach the end of the podcast that you're listening to. I thought, oh, thank God, they fixed that, finally. So it just continues playing because, you know, if you have a whole bunch of episodes that you just want to listen to, that's great. But you know what? They did it backwards. they did it in the order of let's play the next podcast that you've already listened to right after the one that you're done listening to. It doesn't make it makes no sense. Like, you know, I'm thinking I'm crazy or something. Like they must think I am crazy that I want to listen to the one, you know, that I already listened to before the one I just listened to, which is, it's just insane. And so I don't know if Apple, that had to have been a mistake. That makes no sense at all to do that. Have you guys noticed that?
I have not, but I find that incredibly funny that Apple would let the application out the door where it plays a podcast and goes in reverse chronological order.
Yeah. And get this, if you listen to like a podcast, you know, that you, you know, if you do it, well, I don't know. I'm going to verify that. Adam, you were going to say something?
Oh, I want to get clarification on what you're saying. So if I have three episodes of a podcast and they're dated the first week of October, the second week of October, and the third week of October, let's just say. And so you're saying if I start listening to the one that's from the first week of October, it's going to play through and stop?
Yes.
But if I start listening to the most current one, the third week of October, it'll start playing backwards. Like, yeah, it'll go from 3 to 2 to 1.
Yep.
Yeah, that's and you have no way to control that.
No way to control it. And the thing that's most, I mean, yeah, okay, so some people, like there are maybe 5% of people who listen to podcasts who want to listen to it in that order. It's always been a gripe that Apple just does not understand that, you know, that they order it in that way. But if you don't, you listen in the chronological order, and, you know, you listen to the third or whatever, it will then, after it's done, listen to an older one. that you've already listened to. So there's no way to turn it off, which is just irritating. If I could turn it off, I'd be totally fine with it. But after I'm done, I listen to the next older, you know, next oldest one. Yeah, it's crazy. So Apple, fix that, or give us a switch or something. Give us a toggle. That'd be great, because it's just, it's just crazy. I would much rather have it just stop. That'd be so much better, like it was doing before. But yeah, so at least you can do an on the go playlist. Those are pretty easy to do. So that's the workaround for that, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Which I've always been doing in anyway. So hopefully they'll get that right. Moving on, let's talk about, you know, some more 2.2 beta stuff. According to a Greek iPhone site, applications that you delete from your iPhone that you have not rated or written a review for, it will now ask you to leave a rating, a star rating on an application before you delete it. So you hit the little X and it pops up a thing that says, please rate before deleting. And you can, you know, select the amount of stars or just simply say no thanks and then delete it, I assume. I'm not sure if you know, you hit the rate button, it'll, you know, bring you to a dialogue where you then have to write out a review. It would be kind of annoying if it did, because it's a sort of a misleading dialogue. Otherwise, but you know, because right now you don't see any ratings on the App Store that don't come with a review. So, what do you guys think of this? Do you think this is a good thing? Do you think we're gonna get a higher quality of reviews or more reviews out of this? Is this going to be beneficial to the App Store? Or is it going to add to the madness?
I think you're going to get a lot of people. I mean, if you're deleting the app, there's good odds that you don't like it. Right?
Yeah, good point.
Right.
So aren't you just going to get a lot of really like low-star reviews?
We're going to get a lot more like two-word, like, it sucks reviews.
Yeah. Especially if you have to type it out on the iPhone.
Yeah. just like one expletive and that's the review, one star.
Yeah, you'll end up with a lot of reviews that say things like "it stick," because, you know, exactly. They'll hit the wrong letters, and yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's you know, on the surface it sounds like a great idea, but yeah, once you look at that, when you're deleting it, you don't want to. You're not interested in what it is. If you're deleting it, you should probably not, you know, bother this person anymore about, you know, about the application. They're trying to get rid of it. You know, get it out of their lives. They don't want it anymore. So they're probably not going to leave a good review. Hopefully it doesn't.
Right. It should, you know, what they probably should do is look at when the app was installed and how many times it's been launched, and then, you know, kick off that alert when it's been launched for the 20th time or something like that. Hey, you use this app a lot. Would you like to review it?
Oh, that would be so annoying.
Yeah,
I just want to get to my OmniFocus.
But it would be more successful for the reviews, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's
been on the iPhone for, you know, this number of weeks or something like that.
Yeah, I can think of is my scatterbrain. I'm rushing to capture something in OmniFocus before I totally forget it, and you know, it already takes a while to load that thing. And right. if it all of a sudden brings up a dialogue, would you like to review this? I'll say, oh wow, I didn't expect that. And by that time, you know, by the time I realized that there are two buttons and then I need to choose one of them, I will have totally forgotten what I wanted to put in OmniFocus. So, but that's more of a personal problem than anything. Jeff, you use OmniFocus. Do you have that problem? Do you forget sometimes what you're going to capture before you throw it in there?
No, but okay. But here's why. It's because typically when I realize I need to add something to OmniFocus, there's a pen or a pencil in my hand.
Okay.
And yeah. So I actually write it down and then it goes into OmniFocus. Yeah, it's not like I write out the whole thing, but it'll be two or three words so I can remember what it is that I need to add to OmniFocus.
So I haven't figured out the pen and paper thing yet. That works for you, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, keep in mind that I come from the old analog world where we use Daytimer and stuff like that. So,
okay. So
I can still do the throwback thing. And actually, a lot of the time when I'm using OmniFocus on my iPhone, I'm sitting at my desk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'll have like three or four things going on my computer, and then I'll jot a quick note. And then when I get an extra minute, then I grab my iPhone and I put the to-do thing into OmniFocus on my iPhone and let it sync back to my Mac.
Well, don't you just, I mean, you know about the quick key, the quick entry thing in the OmniFocus, right? You can hit a button and it'll bring up a little panel and you can just type in something real quick. You don't even have to go to OmniFocus. You know about that, right?
I do. I use that with mail all the time.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's what I would do if I were at my desk. But yeah, sometimes I just, you know, that's totally off topic, but I do forget sometimes before I actually get it successfully in OmniFocus, which is that the times that happen are lessening. So that is a sign, I think, of me like kind of like becoming a little less retarded or being able to manage it a little better anyway. So,
or maybe you're just not caring anymore.
Maybe that's it. Okay. So, moving on, let's talk about something a recurring theme on the podcast, AT&T and their free Wi-Fi. So they announced on, when was this? Last week, I think, that they were going to be bringing, finally, the free Wi-Fi for all iPhone users, you know, to all their AT&T hotspots. So now it's official. It's really, really, really official, even though they've put it on their website before and said the same exact thing. It's been up on the site for more than 24 hours, so. And it's worked for me. So AT&T is now offering free Wi-Fi to all iPhone owners in any of their AT&T Wi-Fi hotspots, which include Starbucks and among other places like airports and hotels and stuff like that. 17,000 locations, over 17,000 locations, I believe. And so the way that works is you go to a place that has an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. I assume it would have one of those stickers on the door, and go in there, join the AT&T Wi-Fi wireless network on your iPhone. It'll ask you go to the Safari browser. It'll ask for your phone number. You put in your iPhone number. Otherwise, it just won't work because that would be they want to verify that you're an iPhone AT&T subscriber. So this obviously works only in the U.S., and they'll send you a text message, and then you get 24 hours of free Wi-Fi at that spot. So this is what we've been waiting for a long time. There are a few hoops that you have to jump through, you know, such as the waiting for a text message thing, and you have to have service, of course, for that to work in the area. So if you're in an area with no service and you're looking for Wi-Fi, that's not going to work out for you. So yeah, are you guys excited? Adam, I know you go to Starbucks a lot.
I actually don't all that often, but they're around everywhere.
That's true.
Sure. But no, I was very excited to finally see that coming for real.
It wasn't so much I'm excited to have the free Wi-Fi. It's just I'm excited to have it finally stick.
Yeah. I actually tried it out for the first time today, and it wasn't too bad. I was describing it to someone, and they're like, "Oh, that's awful." I'm like, "Well, no. I mean, it actually took about 30 seconds to go through the process." What I was kind of wondering is, it might be kind of funny to plug in someone else's iPhone number and give them free Wi-Fi access to the Starbucks that I'm at.
You know, someone did that. I have a friend who the first day that that was available, he ran to a Starbucks and he's got an unlocked iPhone on T-Mobile, and it said, you know what, he didn't expect it to say what's your AT&T phone number, and so he thought, you know, who has an AT&T phone number? And of course, I came to mind, and he entered my phone number, and it was the same day that it was announced, right? So I had heard about it, but I hadn't gotten the text message that says, "Hey, guess what? It's the you get the free Wi-Fi." So I was expecting that, and I got a message that was kind of like that. It was basically, click here to activate the hotspot that you're at, and I'm like, I'm not at a hotspot. And so he told me about it the next day, and I said, "Oh, geez, you should have called me. I would have activated it for you."
But I don't think, I think that's the check. I mean, that's why they have the SMS, because it's closing the loop so they can verify, okay, you are at this location, at this hotspot, and we can activate your
right
service there.
Yeah.
So I think there's like a hash or some sort of key that's sent in that link that then the router knows that you're at the location, because, you would think it'd be much more convenient just to validate that, oh, yes, you're an AT&T customer, but right. Then, of course, anybody could just enter anybody's phone number and boom, have
right,
it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's kind of some hoops to jump through, but, I mean, for free Wi-Fi, I think it's probably worth it, and it was a quick and pretty painless process.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually much quicker than I, before that I was using the hack around where if you had I was on the Starbucks rewards program with a prepaid card, and as long as you used the prepaid card like once a month or something like that, you could get free access, and in that case you have to plug in your AT&T password, and it was almost easier to do the phone number with the SMS thing than it was to actually have to, bring up the dialogue and select which AT&T service in the little drop down to plug in your password and accept the agreement. And so, I think it works fine. And they're definitely prolific in terms of locations, throughout the U.S. between Barnes & Noble, McDonald's, and Starbucks. I think you've got the whole United States covered.
Right. Now here's the real question. Did you try doing it on your Mac, on your laptop? Have you tried that?
Did not try it on my laptop.
Jeff, have you given this a try yet?
I don't know how to get an SMS to my laptop.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering if it's just a matter of, going to the specially formatted iPhone website, which I don't know what it would be. Just look at it on your phone and type it in your Safari or whatever. And then type in your phone number, click the link on your phone, and I wonder if clicking it on your phone would make it work, or if it would, or if it pulls some information from your phone.
Probably pulling the IMEI number or something like that, you would think.
It'd be interesting
to
look.
That's what I would think.
I don't know if that information can be pulled through text message or whatever, or if the hotspot
is through the initial hotspot connection. You would think it would pick it up. Or at the very least, it certainly could pick up the MAC address of the Wi-Fi card.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on when the Wi-Fi or the MAC address thing is being transmitted at what stage in there. Whether or not you can.
Well, the minute you connect to a Wi-Fi network, that's transmitted.
Right, but I'm like for the access to the through the AT&T system with the text message and all that. I wonder if that's being transmitted from the initial connection with the link or what. It'd be interesting to see if I can have my friend go to the Starbucks, hit my number in there, and if I hit the link, if it would work or not for him.
Here's my best guess, and it would be pretty straightforward. Oh, sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
I was just going to say it'd be pretty straightforward. So you get the phone on there. It's gonna connect to the AT&T hotspot, right?
Yep.
At that point, they capture your MAC address. You fire up Safari. It brings up that page. You plug in your number. What they're capturing is they're capturing your MAC address. They're throwing in and they're capturing the router location, probably the MAC address of the router, putting those into a table and saying, okay, this device is at this router on our network. Now send them a one-time use SMS with this hash key. And if they click it, then activate this device for this MAC address. It's basic MAC address filtering is probably what they're doing. You can do it on your home router. I actually do it on my home routers so that only devices that I've authorized can connect to my network in terms of the MAC address. So that's I'm sure that's all they're doing. And by the time you get the SMS, it's just a matter of verifying, yes, that phone from that location did send that request.
Yeah. So do you think that it could be spoofed like that? Maybe you surf on your MacBook Pro, check it out, hit the link, you know, put the number in there.
Oh yeah, probably if you spoofed the MAC address on your.
I don't know if you need Mac to even like spoof the MAC address. I mean, I don't think anything's happening when you. I mean, maybe when you hit that link in your phone, maybe that's when the MAC address is being captured. Who knows? But if the MAC address is being captured at the point of when you sign in and punch in the number, then I think you could just kind of authorize any device as long as that SMS link is clicked. So I'm going to do some more experimenting with that, and we'll figure this out.
Let us know. My guess is it's not going to work, Mike.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, what I would tell you to try is get the MAC address off your iPhone after yep. clicking the SMS link and use a MAC address spoofer on your iBook or your MacBook and give your MacBook your iPhone's MAC address, and then it might work.
Yeah. Yeah. We're nerds. We'll figure this out somehow.
I think we're over-engineering it. I think AT&T is assuming that most people would not take the time to actually copy that code out of the SMS message, and that...
You think that's the magic?
Yeah, I think that if you got the SMS message back and then you just copied it, you know, like you have a friend sit there and read you that crazy long code, and then you type it into Safari on your MacBook Pro and hit return, that it'll just authorize, and now your MacBook Pro works.
I'm getting in my car as soon as we're done with this podcast, and I'm testing this stuff out. I'm driving to a Starbucks. That's it. I got to figure this out. And so, yeah, that's it. So if you have an iPhone, if you have AT&T service on your iPhone, you can't have an unlocked phone because obviously what we've been just talking about here, you'll get free Wi-Fi. And so it's great. I don't think O'Hare has AT&T Wi-Fi, or maybe they do. I don't remember. It'll be something I test out when I get there in January to head out to Macworld. So let's move on. What do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about the defective 3G adapter? Basically someone at I think it was Mac Merc wanted to figure out, you know, why is Apple replacing these defective adapters? What makes them
because they're defective?
What makes them defective? It is the thing that they were trying to figure out, and so they pulled it apart. It's really remarkable how they fit, you know, all that stuff, all the inverter into that little spot for charging, which is very cool. The problem seems to be that the metal prongs only go in, from where you can see it on the outside. They go inside about an eighth of an inch, and they're held there by a couple dots of glue. And so I think that's what's doing it right there. I mean, there's a nice picture of it, and I'll put this in the show notes. There's a nice picture of a guy holding the other end, the inside end of the thing, and it's just little. Two little bits. There's not much there that's really holding it in there, so it makes sense that, you know, why they fall off pretty easily. So that's pretty interesting.
You know, what's up with people when they're going to do a photo like this? Why don't they wash their hands first? Everyone always has just the most grungy fingernails in these pictures.
Well, they're geeks, right?
Exactly.
You know, they're not thinking about that. You know, they don't.
No, clearly.
They don't clean their fingernails. But it's not a photo shoot to them. It's a, you know, get out your camera and throw it up on the internet. You don't even think about that. I mean, look at the table. I mean, I set up I have a little a mock studio that I have for shooting product reviews, and you know, these guys did it on their basement floor. So, you know, it's what you get. It's cool. I mean, it's these guys who take it apart and figure it out and, you know, tell us why. I was genuinely curious about this, and I haven't actually replaced it. Have you guys replaced your adapters yet?
I haven't had
time. 3G iPhone.
Oh, okay. You and your, I don't have crappy hardware. Okay. Yeah, so if you guys haven't replaced yet, you guys out there in podcast land, you can go to apple.com/support/USB. adapter/exchange program and get the info there to, you know, either send it in. I think you can send it in, right?
You can send it in, or you can go to your local Apple store.
Yep, just remember to bring it in. I've been to an Apple store at least 3 times since the exchange program and haven't brought my adapter once. So
you haven't. Yeah, I would say the key is don't replace it. Don't use it. You don't want one of those prongs coming off in your electrical socket.
Yeah, that'll be fun to pull out of there.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to do that, turn it off at the breaker.
Circuit breaker, folks.
That's right.
Don't try and be cool and get a big long metal rod and think that's going to protect you.
Or better yet, call the trained professional.
Knock it out of there. Okay.
Right. And if you're going to take pictures afterwards, for God's sake, wash your hands first.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about the Opera. Let's talk about apps being rejected from the App Store, because that seems to be
a recurring theme. Surprising, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So Opera, the Opera browser, if you guys aren't familiar with it, it's just a multi-platform web browser. And it's popular with indie kids everywhere who just don't want to use the mainstream thing. I don't know. I don't use Opera. And Jeff, I think you did a big study on all the browsers, and you chose OmniWeb, right?
I chose OmniWeb, and actually Opera came out at the very bottom of my list.
Okay.
And it made my eyes bleed. That's how much I dislike Opera.
Delicious. All right. So, Opera. Yeah, the Opera guys made a version for the iPhone with the SDK and all that, and it came out. I think it was in the New York Times that they said that Apple rejected the Opera browser, which wasn't really a big surprise to anybody. It's kind of unfortunate because we're realizing at this point right now that it's Apple's show and they can reject any application that they want to. In the App Store, it's not really as open of a platform as it really seems at first glance. So, they don't want anything competing with their applications, even if it would be something like, I use Mailplane. If you're not familiar with that, it's a Mac application that, for those of us like me who don't like who really enjoy Google's Gmail interface, all the the archiving and the labels and all that fun stuff. It's basically that in its own wrapper, and it has big buttons, and it's, I don't know why I have it. It just makes me happy that I have a standalone app and I don't have to worry about Safari crashing on me. So I would love to see something like a Mailplane for iPhone, because I love the features of, hitting a button and saying archive instead of, having to go and, move it into a folder and do stuff that, is almost, the way it works. So, but yeah, Apple isn't, They don't seem to want to have anything competing with their main features on the iPhone. So the Opera browser, it wasn't rejected. It turns out that it was they made it and they haven't actually submitted it to Apple. Now, we're not sure if Apple and Opera have been talking to each other, about this, aside from, just simply submitting the application. But from what it looks like, we're not going to be seeing the Opera browser anytime soon with the current SDK. Adam. What do you think? Do you think this is important to have other browsers on there? Is it something that Apple's eventually going to start allowing? Apps that compete with their core applications.
I the only thing I thought about when I saw the story, one, yeah, it's not surprising that if they have submitted it, and there seems to be some discrepancy on whether they have or not. There, I've seen back and forth from a couple different websites, but let's just assume they have submitted it and it was rejected. And we've seen lots of apps rejected before. And I just think browsers are high profile enough. And we had precedents with things like the Microsoft, lawsuits and tying the browser to the operating system kind of stuff that happened. I think this is an area where Apple might get themselves into trouble, because browsers are so high profile. Opera is a browser that's available on a lot of different mobile platforms as an option. I think these guys could make a big enough, stink of it that somebody starts looking into this in terms of anti-competitive practices.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this is obviously anti-competitive. Is the iPhone...
I don't know if it's obviously, I'm not a lawyer, but... it would at least, I think, start to raise some eyebrows, and I think more people publicly would pay attention because they understand what a browser is. You know, they don't understand, you know, some more maybe obscure,
like a mail app or something.
Well, not even a mail app, but I mean, some of the apps, you know, like a podcaster.
Right.
App,
yeah.
Know, nobody's going to get in a really big stink over
that. We're not going to see the Amazon MP3 store on the iPhone as an app.
Yeah.
So I mean, is the iPhone exempt from, you know, anti-competitive, you know, laws or
because I think they just need to be challenged. It's just a matter of who's going to take the time and have the money, and a group like Opera, I think, probably has a better chance of actually mounting, you know, a lawsuit. I mean, look at you can look at the case of SciStar that's going on right now. You know, they've made a lot of headway in building clones, and Apple has not shut them down yet. They're continuing to build clones. They just this last week came out with a model that offers Blu-ray, where Apple doesn't offer Blu-ray, and they're going into closed door talks with Apple to kind of keep things quiet. And the assumption is they'll probably just be paid off, and we'll never know the details, and they'll just kind of quietly go away. But those are the kinds of things that are, you know, very similar to this, where it's an anti-competitive lawsuit. And again, it's just a matter of who's willing to stand up and fight them. In that case, it's a smaller company, but now you have an organization. And I don't know all the details on the group behind Opera, but isn't it an open source group? Do you happen to know?
Jeff, I think you'd know better than anyone here, anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I don't think they're open source, although they do offer products for free.
Yeah.
But it's not open source.
Okay, but Firefox, on the other hand, those guys, you know, they're backed by a large community of people. I don't know how much, you know, firepower they have behind them if they decided they wanted to have the Mozilla browser on there, or Firefox, and, you know, whatever. So you think it's just a matter of someone standing up to Apple?
Right.
Before
who has the money? And Opera, I'm pretty sure Opera is a private company, and they license their browser to a lot of other mobile platforms, and I think they make a lot of money off that licensing. So they might have the position and the lawyers and the money to actually, you know, take the fight to Apple. So it was kind of the first rejection, where if it, you know, again, assuming it has been rejected, where I thought, Apple could see a fight on their hands.
It's a little higher profile than like a podcaster or a mail wrangler. You know, I should point out, you know, for those who don't know what, you know, the advantage to using Opera on a mobile phone are, they do something really interesting with what they with their browser. Basically, I think it's called Opera Mini when they put it on a phone, and the idea is you type in a URL or hit a link or whatever. Then that request is sent to the Opera servers, and at that point, the Opera servers query the web page, load it up fully, and then they send you this proprietary image. It's an image in a proprietary format that Opera does, basically to improve rendering speeds on mobile devices that, you know, aren't necessarily the fastest devices out there. So they're achieving. Supposedly, I haven't seen a whole lot of benchmarks or anything like that, you know, around Opera Mini as opposed to, you know, like a Safari, because obviously we can't really do that without Opera Mini on the iPhone. But, you know, you can see that there's definitely potential for something like that to be really fast. And, you know, obviously that would get Apple, you know, if Opera Mini was there and it was much faster than Safari, and Safari is pretty fast, you know, aside from it, you know, freezing up and crashing, you know, it would get more people using Opera Mini. And I believe there's a lot of money. Correct me if I'm wrong, Adam or Jeff. There's a lot of money in having like the Google search bar, right? Don't they get kickbacks for that?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, that obvious, that, you know, right there would, you know, lose the money, not only just, you know, having simple market share of, you know, of the browser, but, you know, losing money as well. So I can definitely see why they would be a little hesitant about having something like that on there, regardless of the fact of whether or not it's better or not, you know. But yeah, it is anti-competitive, I think.
You know, I was actually surprised to hear that Opera was even considering writing a browser for the iPhone. And the reason I say that is because I was asking back at Macworld 2008, if companies that that are making web browsers were going to try and port their browser to the iPhone. And what I kept hearing was, no, why would we want to do that? We would just end up making a Safari clone because they already figured out how to do the interface for the touch device, and we would just have to copy it. So why would we do that?
Right. Well, I mean, there's obviously more to that than just having the interface work.
Right.
I mean,
right.
The Opera Mini is a perfect example of that. It's a totally different way of rendering a page.
Right. But for the average user, they're not going to figure that out. And I think that was the thing that a lot of these other companies were keying in on, was that there really wouldn't be anything for the average run-of-the-mill user to look at and say, okay, I get why this web browser is better than Mobile Safari.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's definitely a market for, you know, having Opera. There are some people who would totally jump at that, you know, the people who do use Opera. You know, and of course, Opera could, you know, almost definitely include extra features that, you know, are more obvious to the end user, you know, to as an advantage over Safari. You know, just something cool that, you know, Opera would do, aside from just having it simply be faster, because not everybody understands that, you know, there's a different way of rendering it, and that therefore it's faster, even though you're on the same network and it has the same bandwidth and all of that. So, I mean, the market wouldn't be that large, and, you know, it's interesting. So it'll be fun to see how that works out. Definitely if Opera goes against Apple, or if, you know, maybe even Firefox decides to, because there's a lot of loyalty behind Firefox, for example. People would absolutely love to use Firefox on their iPhone, especially those on Windows. And I think the market share of people who have iPhones at this point it's probably larger skews, you know, over to the Windows side more than the Mac side. As much as we'd like to think that it you know, it's mostly Mac users, I think there are a lot more Windows users with iPhones at this point.
There probably are. And all right, so I'm going to backtrack just a little bit to make sure that that people get where I'm coming from with all this. You know, I've already said Opera makes my eyes bleed. Why would a company
We're going to get some emails.
I know. I know. Yeah, so Opera makes my eyes bleed. I've complained about it, and I've said, why would anyone want to make a web browser to put on the iPhone since we already have Mobile Safari? All of that said, I would love to see other web browsers and other email applications available for the iPhone so that people have a choice and can pick out the application that works best for them.
And also, competition is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Because it makes the, you know, better products. You know, we'll see more features and better stability and all of that, because if an Opera browser hit the App Store tomorrow and it was, you know, 100 times more stable than Safari, you can bet that I would start using that thing, because I'm really sick of, you know, Safari's crap.
And yeah, I think a lot of people are. Yeah, that wouldn't be too hard, would it?
Right.
You know, in that situation, I would wipe the tears of blood from my eyes, load Opera, and start using it. I mean, if it was more stable than Mobile Safari, which, yes, would not take much.
You know what? On that subject really quick, and I don't know if you guys have found this, but just as a general tip for people who are using the iPhone, I found with mine, in terms of crashiness, it will start to get kind of buggy, and I don't know why this is. I cannot explain the underpinnings of it, but very often I will install an app or a new app, and might not even be a new app, but maybe I just have an app that suddenly starts misbehaving.
Yep.
And crashes. And after that first initial crash, the whole phone itself just seems to become unstable. Like, yeah. Safari, other applications, and then just simply doing a hard reset of the iPhone, holding down the home button and the, you know, what do you call it? The reset.
This is the sleep wake key.
Doing that reset usually seems to clear that out. So it's almost like something gets kind of stuck in, you know, it's like that initial crash gets stuck or corrupts something within the iPhone, and it just kind of spreads itself out until you actually do that reset. And that's just kind of been what I've found.
Kind of like
anytime I experience that, I just do that and it seems to go away.
I've noticed the exact same thing. And I've been a little nicer with my iPhone. I'll get very frustrated with it, and I'll just, you know, I'll just, you know, I'll punish it and, you know, forcibly restart it that way, you know, because it's been misbehaving. but you know, for the most part, I'll do the soft restart, and it generally does the, you know, the same job. It may be even nicer for it, because I think it, I mean, obviously the iPhone is OS 10 and it'll run a check disk or an FSCK or whatever. It's not check disk. Am I retarded? That's Windows, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, Mac OS. I'm sorry. So it'll run an FSCK. You know, if you forcibly restart it, I believe. So you'll get like a longer reboot. If you do it that way, at least that's what I've seen. So, but yeah, I've definitely noticed that exact behavior, yep. On my phone.
And I did some research on FSCK a while back, and you know, some people refer that to that as, my favorite way to say it is, F-suck.
Yeah.
You guys are just totally entertaining me tonight, so keep it up. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if Apple or the iPhone has the ability to do like a page file. To create a page file on the iPhone, that kind of sounds like it could be disastrous quickly. And it seemed, you know, that's the exact behavior that you would see. I mean, if you have a memory leak or a bad application or something that just crashes, in an ideal situation, I believe that there's, you know, memory allocated for iPhone apps only. I believe that's 10 megabytes of RAM for any open iPhone application, and that's all it gets, and that's for any application. So all the applications share that same space, and the rest is allocated to iPhone apps. And I may be totally wrong on that, but that's the way I understand it right now. So you wouldn't think in that situation that, you know, if, you know, you have you know, Brightkite crash or something like that, and you wouldn't see the that problem carry over into the iPod app or something like that. But it does seem to be doing that. And the only situation I can see that, you know, that would be a problem is if, you know, it's using more RAM than it's supposed to and possibly even creating a page file, because that's, you know, that's when we see the performance drop on our Macs or, you know, whatever, on our PCs too. When we start using memory on our storage device as opposed to the actual RAM. So, hopefully that's something that's fixed. I mean, obviously 2.1 isn't perfect. It's fixed a lot of problems. But there are more yet to be fixed. So,
yeah, I found 2.1 to be overall more stable.
Yeah.
But I have yet to see any stability improvements in Safari. Yep. On my iPhone.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we're looking forward to the 2.2. If anything, I'm looking forward to the maps features. Those are going to be fun. Yep. To go to Chicago with. Let's talk about hacking real quick. I know that's not something that a lot of people have any interest in right now, but one fairly interesting thing and very, very interesting thing popped up. The dev team has successfully jailbroken a beta version of iPhone 2.2. So, you know, ta-da, they've been able to do that. Not a big surprise, because they've kind of gotten a handle on, you know, how everything is done now on the iPhone.
Why doesn't Apple just make it open and just be done with it? I mean, is there even any point?
There's not. I mean, it's not like they're protecting users who are, you know, who would get themselves into trouble and wouldn't know what to do and call them, right? I mean, you only got the hackers. Then again, okay, yeah, I'll say, you know, Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick is in my Mac user group, and he showed me his jailbroken iPhone. There are a lot of people who did jailbreak their phones who didn't, you know, have a full grasp of, you know, what they were doing to their phone and, you know, what the risks were and all of that. But right now with the App Store, you know, I'm going to say 90% of people who want, you know, who have the iPhone and who would consider jailbreaking their phone are not going to, because of the App Store, because there's just simply no reason. I mean, at this point, I think we've said this before, it's basically quick and, you know, maybe for those who want to tinker around, you know, with, you know, like plists or something. And maybe if they want to get sharing of the tethering, that's what I'm looking for. If they want to get tethering going and they didn't grab NetShare, Otherwise, there's no real reason, and it doesn't seem like, you know, Apple shouldn't really be fighting this battle. The only reason Apple should be fighting this is for unlocking, and because, you know, jailbreak is kind of required to unlock your phone, because you obviously need to get access to the software and the OS and all that to get it to work correctly. So on that note, something very interesting popped up today. It seems that the new notebooks that Apple just released, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro, but the aluminum versions of those, I haven't verified if the MacBook Air or the updated MacBook Pro 17-inch or the, you know, the MacBooks, the white ones, have the same problem. But jailbreak Pwnage does not work on the new notebooks, and I verified this with mine. I can't. There's a special mode, Direct Firmware Upgrade, DFU mode, that is required. It's a special, you know, you got to hold each button a certain amount of time to get it into that special mode for the Pwnage to actually work. And that's, you know, that's the thing that really is the most important step in the whole pwning of your phone thing. And that no longer works. You can get the phone into the DFU mode, but it simply is not recognized by iTunes. It just throws up an error. And I've heard, you know, a couple, there's been someone in the forums who, you know, discussing that, saying that after trying it many, many times, it actually worked, but for me, it did not work. So, it seems that Apple is doing something, with their hardware, to prevent this from working, because I actually, cleaned out my iTunes and all the things that would affect that and installed a fresh iTunes, and, it still had the same problem. So Apple is clearly staying on top of that and keeping their allegiances to AT&T. I think it's in their contract, right? I mean, there's almost no doubt that it's in their contract that they're supposed to, that part of it is that they try and thwart the unlockers.
I would assume that's in their contract. If not, then AT&T needs to get new lawyers.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So it's just, it's very, very interesting to see that they've gone to that length. I mean, obviously you go to your friend's house and have him unlock it, or go just grab a PC or something. Assuming it's not a software thing and they've updated that version of iTunes that I just downloaded today to have that special, don't let this work thing in there. So I'll do a little bit more testing and maybe use a PowerBook or something like that and see if that works. But yeah. It's interesting that they're doing that. It seems like in the hardware right now, and the only thing that's curious about that is the DFU mode is very important to Apple as well, because as far as I know, that's what they use to when you first assemble an iPhone and get all the hardware in there, you have the basic stuff and you don't have the OS or anything like that. It's not really an iPhone until you add the firmware onto it, so the hardware knows what to do and say, oh, hey, there's a Bluetooth and there's a camera and all that. So the direct firmware upgrade is kind of the lowest level mode before you actually get all that, the operating system and the firmware and all that on there. So I assume that, you know, you just need special hardware, or simply that's just not accessible on a MacBook Pro now. So there we have it. Do you guys, Adam, do you have any comments on that? You want to?
No, I mean, I don't jailbreak, so it doesn't really affect me. I mean, it's interesting, but, you know, I'd have to do a lot more investigating to find out. And I think you mentioned it just kind of happened. So I haven't really had time to follow up on that and see what's going on there. And it's obviously something related to the new hardware designs or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder, what the dev team has to say. I haven't checked. Yeah. What's that?
I was going to take it back because I was thinking initially maybe something related to the hardware design, but also it does have that special build of, it is a special build of 10.5.5. So
it
maybe
is a special
tweak,
build. Yeah. So, yeah, who knows? It'll be interesting because, I mean, as far as I know from, you know, the little amount of hacking that I've done, I actually replaced all of the, like, even I went into the system folder, the actual private frameworks, and I replaced that special framework, the mobile device framework that, you know, actually lets the computer talk to the iPhone, and I replaced that with the stock iTunes downloaded version. And like I said, that could have changed. I'll have to check that out. But, you know, it, who knows? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the dev team has to say. I haven't checked out the IRC yet and talked to them at all about that. So, but it just kind of, that's something that was discovered today as far as I know. So,
cat and mouse, you know, continue.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, Apple may be in a situation where, regardless of what they want happening with the hacking community, where they're kind of obligated to try and stop the hackers so that they can have the precedent set that this is a platform that's very controlled. And then down the road, if someone decides they want to sue them because they can't get their app on the App Store or whatever the reason is, they have the precedent set that they've worked very hard to maintain the platform in a certain way. And that may be a big part of what they're doing, is just simply maintaining that image of controlling the platform for legal reasons.
Could be. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. It's interesting. We'll see what the dev team says when they I guess they either get a hold of it or maybe it is just a software thing. But yeah, they're if anything, they have obligations to AT&T to make sure that unlocking doesn't work. And yeah, as benign as simple jailbreaking is, that is the gateway drug to unlocking. So,
yes, it is.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so that's all we have on the news front. Let's move on to our iPhone picks. But before we do that, we have a new sponsor, and that sponsor is Audible. And if you're not familiar with what Audible is, they're a provider of course, audiobooks, radio and TV programs, and a bunch of different stuff. But primarily, they're an audiobook provider, and they have over 50,000 titles, and they're professionally read, and you can play them right on iTunes, on your iPod, and of course on your iPhone. And because they're a sponsor, they're giving away a free audiobook. It's a 14-day trial of Audible Listener Gold. You get a free credit toward one book of your choice on the Audible store. It's a fantastic offer. I actually signed up for Audible last year in, I think, February, and I love Audible. I discovered, you know, I don't read a lot of books because I don't have a lot of time, or at least that's what I tell myself. But, you know, the bottom line is I don't read a lot of books just because because it takes a lot of time, and that's why I love podcasts, especially in the car. You know, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, when I'm at home working or anything, because that sort of distracts me. But in the car, I love to keep my brain active and keep learning new things. And so I listen to podcasts, actually. And so I realized that Audible is just the exact same thing. If you love listening to podcasts, especially this long form kind of stuff, Audible is perfect for you, because you're keeping your brain active. You're learning new things, and you know, you're also being entertained because it's an audiobook. So I'm going to pick an audiobook from Audible, one of the first books that I grabbed, because I'm a big Apple fan, and of course the famous 1984 ad that Apple put out, and I think that's one of the most highly recognized ads, you know, of all time, one of the most highly recognized ads. So I wanted to check out, you know, obviously 1984 by George Orwell. It's a fantastic book. If you're an Apple fan, you should definitely check that out. Use the special link. audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. You can get that book for free. It's normally, I'm checking it out, it's normally $20. It's a free, free download if you sign up for Audible. And, when you sign up for that, you get credits, I think every month or so, depends on what your level is, in Audible. You can sign up for a different subscription type. It's sort of like Netflix, so you get, you know, a certain amount of credits, so you can buy them ad hoc, you know, just, you know, buy the book, and you don't have to be a member. But if you're a member, you get credits, and so you can get these great books. You can also get stuff like Icon, the Steve Jobs book. It's a great book to check out. They have that on Audible as well, so it's great. It's a perfect fit if you like podcasts. So check out Audible, audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And are you guys Audible members?
Yes, sir. I love Audible. they've been a sponsor of my show in the past. And, I had been an Audible subscriber long before that, and for all the same reasons that you were talking about. I mean, I think part of the reasons I like podcast is because I like just spoken word content, and
I
just don't have time to read a lot these days. So long commute, throw in an Audible book or on a trip, it's great.
Definitely, and they work perfectly on your iPhone, because you know you're always you always have your iPhone with you, and if you have a couple books in there, they're pretty compact, and but they sound pretty good, you know, because it's just spoken word, it doesn't have to be too high quality. But you know, at the same time, they have great readers on there. So yeah, we're very thankful, you know, to have Audible sponsoring the show. So audiblepodcast.com/iPhone, and you can get your free trial there if you don't already have it. So with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, what do you have for us this week?
You know, after all the Audible talk and 1984 and George Orwell, my pick just seems amazingly lowbrow.
Go for it.
Right. So I found this app the other day that you can use to come up with excuses to get out of meetings. It's called Fake Calls.
Okay.
And what you can do is set it so that it makes your phone ring after a set amount of time. And it will even go so far as to display whatever name and phone number on your iPhone display
want
it to show. And then you can tap the answer button and act like you're talking on the phone. And yeah, fake calls.
Fake calls.
It's a whopping 99 cents.
That is worth the 99 cents. That is fantastic. Great pick. I love it. All right.
Well, I feel less lowbrow now. So I'm midbrow.
You're midbrow. All right. Adam, what do you have for us?
You know, I think I may have done this pick already, but I'm going to do version two of the pick.
Okay.
Remind me if I've done this one. This last week, my Bluetooth headset broke. It fell apart. And that's kind of the bad part of the pick. I'm not really sure. I can't prove that it wasn't due to my own negligence, so I'm not going to fault the product for it.
Well, what was it? What was the Bluetooth headset?
It was the Jawbone headset.
The first or second gen?
The first generation one, which I absolutely loved. It was awesome. It sounded great. Everybody I talked to said it sounded great.
Mm-hmm.
So it broke, and I thought, well, do I get a new Jawbone or do I, you know, look at something else? And I asked around, and everybody said, no, you need to get the Jawbone. So I mm-hmm. got the new one, and I love it more than the first one. It's smaller, it's lighter, it's much more comfortable.
Does it sound better?
It's in my ear better. Huh?
Does it sound better?
I'm not noticing a huge difference in the sound. It sounded great before, though, so it's hard to compare great to greater, or I guess, I don't know. but no, it sounds awesome. It's just the design's a lot cooler. The light is kind of integrated into the side. You really can't see where the little sensor is now. It's actually cut into kind of one of the diamonds on the side of it. I like the slimmer profile. The other one always seemed kind of big and chunky to me.
Yeah, you look a lot less like a Borg now.
This one feels more like the Apple one, because the other one I was considering was the other one that kind of got the best reviews was Apple's. And so I was thinking about getting that one, and this is very similar, I think, in size.
You're saying that the Apple Bluetooth headset got similar reviews to the Jawbone?
In terms of, like form and fit and design and stuff like that, but not for sound quality.
Yeah, or for battery life or for falling out of your ear, because it's just kind of in there.
And I heard that from all those people. So that's why they said. Now, they say the battery life on this one's not as long, the standby time.
That would make sense, yeah, because it's smaller.
Yeah, but I always turn mine off. So I only have it on, you know, I just turn it on and off, so I don't really leave it on and running, so I haven't really noticed any difference there, but I haven't had it that long yet.
Gotcha.
So
okay,
but for the lightweight, for the just design styling and the better fit, it's an improved product, and I would recommend it to anybody.
Yep, it's great. The Jawbone, it's $129.99. I think you can get it at jawbone.com. So
yep, I picked mine up at Best Buy. So
yep, at Best Buy too, or AT&T, your local AT&T store, or whatever.
The Apple Store.
Yep. Can you get it at the Apple Store?
That's where I got my first one, so I'm assuming they would have the new one, but
yeah.
Okay. You know, check, call ahead.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so my pick is free, and I think it's fantastic. It's Google Earth for the iPhone. I was actually kind of afraid that you guys would steal that one from me, but I'm glad that you didn't. If you're a fan of Google Earth on the desktop, this you may end up using this one over the one on the desktop, frankly, because it's so cool. Because if you've seen the Jeff Hahn demo, the famous demo of multi-touch when it was first when he first demoed it at TED, I think in 2006 maybe. It was just that one demo where everyone said, "Oh man, if Apple makes a phone, it's gonna be multi-touch. It's gonna have that cool thing." And he showed, you know, one of the demos was, you know, a globe, and he would just use multi-touch to move around, and it was just so cool. And of all the applications on the iPhone, I think that the Google Earth application is the one that emulates that the most. It just feels so futuristic. You can just you start off looking at a picture of the entire Earth. You can just pinch in and out. You know, grab it, turn it, move it around. You can even tilt up and down. You can see, you know, the actual terrain. So you can go down like to the Grand Canyon and see the actual canyon there. Most of the basic stuff that you can do in the regular Google Earth app on your computer, you can do with this application on the iPhone. It's fantastic. It's got the multi-touch and all that really cool stuff. You can it's location aware, so you can just hit the button. It'll bring it right down to where you are. You can run a search for a place if you can, you want to type in Cupertino or something like that and check out the Apple campus. You can do that. Assuming you're that much of a geek. Of course you are, because you're listening to this podcast. And so you can also turn on Wikipedia, just like you can on the regular Google Earth application. You can turn on Wikipedia, and it'll show, when you zoom in on certain places, it'll show little Wikipedia links to those actual locations, which is very, very cool. So you can hit that, it'll bring up a page, and you can read all about it there. It's a fantastic app. Have you guys seen the Google Earth app yet?
Yeah,
it's very
cool. I tried
it
out. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's just one of those apps that, you know, if you only have a couple apps, you just better get the Google Earth application so you can wow your friends who don't have an iPhone yet and just say, check out what my phone can do. You know, I have the entire world in my pocket, and I can just, you know, move it and do cool things with it. So it's very cool. Google Earth, it's free, and that is my pick. So with that, check out iPhoneAlley.com. You can get more news, tips, and reviews every day from there. If you want to send us a tip, you found something cool on the iPhone that you want to share with everybody, you can use the link on the side of the page. It's the Contact Us link. And so we'll get that up in our tips section. Or if you have an application or a product you'd like us to review, check out before you buy it, you can ask us to do that as well. So we can you can do that at the contact link. Once again, we have the new RSS widget. So for those of you on a Mac who use the dashboard, you can grab our RSS feed using a little widget. It's pretty cool. I like it. Obviously, we made it, so I like it. But it's great. Check it out. And of course, show notes are at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. You can get the, obviously everything we talk about here, as well as our picks are, usually updated there. I kind of get lazy every now and then, but for the most part, they're up there. If you have any feedback regarding the podcast, any nasty letters you want to send our way, if we said anything offensive.
Oh, like that would ever happen.
Yes. or any words of praise too. You can send all that stuff to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And once again, from the Mac Observer, Mr. Jeff Gamet is here. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yep. And also follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet, J-G-A-M-E-T. And Adam Christensen, also from the MacCast at maccast.com, and on Twitter at twitter.com/maccast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And you know, follow me. I may post a link to a hamster battle while I'm pretending to do work during the day, and so you can join me in that fun. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No.
Made up.